a decolonized psychology is making space for Indigenous knowledge systems as well. That's about a holistic approach to mental health and well-being. So in relation to their connection to their family and kinship, to their community, to their culture, to their country, to their ancestors and spirituality.
Welcome to the Emerging Minds podcast.
This podcast is one of a five-part series developed in partnership and led by the team from the Transform in Indigenous Mental Health and Wellbeing Research Program and the Centre of Best Practice in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Suicide Prevention. You will have the opportunity to hear and learn from inspirational Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander experts and their allies in the field of social and emotional wellbeing and mental health. You will also explore key concepts and frameworks and learn how you might apply this knowledge in your own practice to better support the social and emotional wellbeing needs of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children and their families. Hello and welcome back to the second episode in a two-part podcast series on decolonising psychology. We will continue our conversation today with Professor Pat Dudgeon AM, Belle Selkirk and Dr. Joanna Alexi. A few of the many inspirational leaders in Australia who are challenging and redefining dominant Western paradigms in psychology as part of the Australian Indigenous Psychology Education Project. We will hear about the history of the project and the resilience and determination of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander leaders who have persisted over many years to include Indigenous world knowledges into psychology curriculum. Welcome back, and thank you for continuing this wonderful conversation. Let's get straight back into it. I wonder if you could describe in your own words what a decolonised psychology system looks like, Aunty Pat.
A decolonised psychology is not throwing out the baby with the bathwater. So there's some elements of psychology that are important to us that we need to keep. But it is taking a critical view on psychology and the interventions that we do. You know, are they suitable for all people? I'd be asking, because we talk to a lot of psychologists in the field, working sometimes, you know, in cities, in remote areas, in prisons. And as a professional, I'd like to think that my practice and my approach is as professional and useful as possible. But there are still some interventions and some approaches that are needed no matter what. But for me, a decolonised psychology is making space for Indigenous knowledge systems as well. And one particular one that I've been involved in is the social emotional wellbeing approach. And that's about a holistic approach to mental health and wellbeing. And it's about, it's deeper. Belle talked about something was missing earlier. This one's a deeper, this probably helps fill up some of those missing bits. So a social emotional wellbeing approach isn't just about the self in relation to their physical self and their mental self, but it's also in relation to their connection to their family and kinship, to their community, to their culture, to their country, to their ancestors and spirituality. And around that model, and you might have seen it out there, is the factors or the forces that are impacting on us as people and a group of people all the time. And they are that history of colonization, so historical determinants, social determinants, which impact on everyone, you know, where we live, our employment, our income, experiences of racism. So social determinants are a part of that, cultural determinants and political determinants. So, you know, the great disadvantage we see in Indigenous communities hasn't come out of nowhere. That's still part of the colonising and racist, institutionalised racism that's was a part of colonization. So we're seeing that disadvantage, silencing, excluding as part of that colonial story. So that for us, for me in particular, that model is good because it recognizes those other elements, but it also talks about working on the strengths of Aboriginal people as well. So we come from a very strength-based approach. This is just one model. There's lots of big picture models emerging. There's lots of activities that are, you know, healing activities that are emerging. A lot of Aboriginal people, Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people are now stepping up and finding their own knowledges and sharing that, using that to heal and to recover. So I think it is exciting. You know, there's a whole range of different activities that are happening. But I think for us, and we tested that model when we, and it was developed from a legacy of Aboriginal health professionals who'd worked on it. But we actually tested it. We took it to Indigenous conferences and presented it there, and people loved it. They felt that they could relate to it. Had they not liked it, they would have told us so very quickly. So I think that it's great, and it certainly can shift the way, you know, notions of selfhood are perceived, but also how we give services. You know, what does a good social emotional wellbeing service look like? What would social emotional wellbeing interventions look like? And it's not just for us. I know that some Indigenous psychs have used that model with their non-Indigenous clients as well. And I always thought, well, you know, would the connection to country be a problem or a challenge? And this particular psych said, no, we are all of the earth. So, you know, we you know, dig our toes into the soil, and we are part of this earth. And I think if we had a greater appreciation and love for Earth, then, you know, that would have implications on how we view planetary well-being and climate change. So these models are not just for our own people, they're for everyone.
Thank you for sharing that, Anipat. What an amazing project to be involved in. Belle, how would you describe it?
When I try to explain what social and emotional well-being feels like, I like to, first of all, I usually explain to people that, you know, when we look at the SEWB wheel, it's in those, you know, like those pie slices, but they're not dissected like that. They move and intersect and breathe and flow with each of those domains, including that self. And so it isn't about individualism and siloing of these different domains. It's about integrating. And I kind of say integrating in the same breath, in the same moment. That's what that holistic interconnection is. And of course, we can focus on one aspect if that's where we need to do some strengthening. But it's important to feel that it's all in the one movement. And if we kind of think of it in that way, it kind of starts to give us a little bit of a symbol of that. So it's all together. And Indigenous psychologist Mary Goslett will talk about that relational self, and that relational self isn't that those domains exist for me. I exist in relation to all of these things, and we move and breathe together and we exist together. And that's that interconnected holism. And the example that I like to give to people where I often really do feel that viscerally in my body is I love to hike. And when I'm walking on country and hiking on country, I notice a real shift within my body and my nervous system. And I notice that my attention is paying attention to less of that cognitive chit chat, but actually to what's happening in Mother Nature. I'm noticing more what the weather's doing. I'm noticing more what the animals are doing at that time of year. And I'm noticing that also my brain likes to remember Noongar language a lot easier when I'm in that mode. And I describe it as like an effortlessness. You know, there's an ease that sits there. There's a grounded and a connectedness, and almost like you're with an old friend, or you're having a hug, or there's just a gentleness that sits there. And so, you know, if I see something happening in the bushes, my mind very easily kind of might come up with a Noongar word that goes to that. So that speaks to me of that interconnection with all those domains happening in the same breath and happening at once. It's not forced. It's kind of happening through me and with me. And who knows what, you know, song lines or ancestors that are happening around me or not, I don't know. But I like to think that is part of that integration that happens. And all I'm doing is going for a walk on country, but actually there's a lot of things happening in that one experience. And it's why I love doing it.
Joanna, I'd really be interested to hear from a non-Aboriginal perspective, because I know it's kind of a lifelong journey, isn't it? You work within a system, and then you've had to basically unlearn that. Do you want to talk to me a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. Yeah, it's a lifelong journey, as you mentioned, of actually taking on board new knowledges as well as unlearning, but also I think unlearning in a system that still, for the most part, can reinforce some challenging processes. So even if I'm thinking about research, it takes time, particularly within this field, to actually build relationships and to be in the space. And I think, you know, even just thinking about some of those system changes that need to happen to also reinforce that good process and that good love is important. I was really fortunate to be a part of the Cultural Exchange Program, which, coming into the research space, it was a program that was developed with Angela Ryder at the Langford Aboriginal Association and through longstanding relationships that had with Angela. And this was really a program that was set up in the Transforming Indigenous Mental Health and Wellbeing team that I work within, to help the new researchers to actually gain not just a cultural awareness, but actually really that trigger point of that lifelong learning in cultural responsiveness and in working in culturally responsive ways within Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander contexts and research. And so we were just so fortunate. So the way the program was set up was that there were several Noongar elders that Angela had connected us to, and we would go to the Langford Aboriginal Association Friday, I believe it was, Friday afternoon, and just be able to yarn with the local Noongar elders that Angela had connected us with. And really through those conversations, you know, it wasn't, I think initially the plan was to have some structure around topic areas, but actually the conversation had just flowed so naturally and beautifully that it was just an experience that you just can't pick up out of a textbook. Like, it really took that experiential learning of what the experience was like for these elders growing up in Australia when they did all of the, you know, horrible experiences that they had gone through, and also so much, I guess, light and positivity that they were bringing that they could see for the future. And it was that, I suppose, that kind of discrepancy, or that the way those two aspects kind of melded to really bring so much hope that we can actually change things and support more cultural responsiveness and better research processes. That was, you know, one of the big things was that, you know, there was a comment like, oh, you know, research that we know has actually done some really harmful things. Like, we want this process to help you to actually support better research and for that to be safe for Aboriginal people to be in the space. And so yeah, that was actually just the most like profound experience. I think it's just changed the trajectory of understanding, firstly, and then for myself to be self-reflecting and critically conscious of the things that I'm doing. So I'm always picking up on things like, you know, I might say something and think, oh, actually, hold on a minute, I don't think that was quite right, and that didn't land where I wanted it to. And what's that about? And actually reflecting on the process for myself, so that the next time something like that comes up, I can actually do it with integrity and in a way that is going to make someone else feel safe in my presence. So it's really transformed, yeah, the way I am, I think, and the processes that I take.
I'm going to ask you a final question, actually two. So Belle, this one's for you. So seeing the amazing leaders that have come before you, the social and emotional wellbeing framework, and the strong leaders that have supported that, how will you take their tenacity going forward into your work in the future? The constant fight, the ongoing frustration of working within systems, becoming that next generation of leaders and holding what the elders and the Aunty Pats have laid before us.
It's a really thought-provoking question, and I hope I do it some justice, and probably my mind will keep thinking on this actually now that you've planted that seed. But I think what immediately comes up for me is working in psychology, whether it's in our communities or research spaces or policy spaces, these are hard but important jobs. And it's fraught with lots of challenges and difficulties, but also some really heartfelt strengths and successes that gets you really excited and gives you enthusiasm. And we can easily get lost in, I guess, the kind of colonial ways of doing things in these kind of like high-pressured, fast-paced world. And I find that there's been some really humbling moments when I've been able to listen to some beautiful old people and our elders, and coming back to some of those cultural teachings and walking in those good ways with relationship, with respect, with humility. Those cultural teachings have really helped me keep my groundedness in the tough work days, in the high pressure days, or even the days that are hard when you're kind of, you know, hitting some of the barriers, or you're not quite getting the movement in projects that you want to. or working with communities with really tough stuff. And it's, we've said this a few times in our teams, but, you know, Indigenous knowledge is not in the outcome, it's in the process. So if we walk well and we remember those cultural teachings and that groundedness, we will get there where we need to go, but, and we know that we've gotten there with good integrity. So that's what I want to keep taking forward with myself is walking in those cultural ways that our old people teach us, and can't really go wrong there.
Beautiful. You've summarised that so beautifully. Thank you. And I suppose to finish off, what are your hopes for the future in this work?
So I would love to see a future where we have a very robust, thriving Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander psychology workforce where there are we are a big collective with diversity within that, and then it's a cohesive collective in that, you know, there's respect and celebration amongst us because we all are wanting to do this really beautiful work together, even with differences of opinions or philosophies. That's okay, but I'd love to see an Indigenous psychology workforce in Australia that where we're working together and we're aspiring young people to come into our profession and knowing that they've got leaders and mentors and that they are loved and supported to come into this profession and to do the work that they want to do with their families and their communities, that good work that they want to do. So that's what I'd love to see.
And for you, Joanna?
That you summarised that so beautifully. I'm not sure what to add to that other than to say that I would really just love to see, echoing Bell's sentiments as well, around just an inclusive psychology that embeds Indigenous knowledges and actually really values it as part of being able to think critically about how we work with people and those processes that we're taking. And I think, you know, a big one as well is to see that workforce shift and that we're creating culturally safe spaces for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples to be in and to want to be able to access care because they know they're going to receive culturally safe care. So that would be just a really, yeah, important one coming out of the education space.
Excellent. And Aunty Pat, I've got to add this one in for you in closing. So when you started this work, what were your hopes then?
When I started, I think my hopes were just to have some Indigenous presence in the discipline. It's far exceeded what I could envisage. And as we were talking, I was thinking of other examples, for instance, in the School of Psychological Science at Curtin University. At one stage, and I don't know if they've replaced this person, but they had a cultural consultant. So he was a Noongar mental health professional who was there for staff and students. And he loved his work. I remember meeting with him and I just would have never envisaged that they would have done that, made that possible. So I hope they did. I know he moved on to another job. So I hope he was replaced by someone. I think, you know, that gives our people an entree into the area too, our elders, our mental health professionals. But what I'd like to see beyond myself is where everyone has access to mental health wellbeing programs and services. So no matter Aboriginal, Torres Strait Islander people, non-Aboriginal people, that if you think that it's you need to do a back-to-country camp, you can go to your local AMS or whatever it is and book in, you know, to have that experience. If you just want to have your soul renewed, to getting you know, if you need to get medication, if you need to go away and heal, there should be a whole range of different services. Some of them will be, you know, Western origin, but some will be distinctly Indigenous. So I'd like to see the programs that are starting to emerge that are not only available for Aboriginal people but for all people as well. And I think that's a possibility. So we should all have a number of different options to keep us safe and to ensure that we flourish as human beings with a deep respect, as Bell said, a respectful consideration of each other and our planet.
What an amazing conversation. Thank you all so very much. And to all our listeners, if you would like to learn more about this work, there are interactive papers and fact sheets that accompany these podcasts. Please visit the Emerging Minds website to learn more at www.emergingminds.com.au.
Visit our website at www.emergingminds.com.au to access a range of resources to assist your practice. Brought to you by the National Workforce Centre for Child Mental Health, led by Emerging Minds. The National Workforce Centre for Child Mental Health is funded by the Australian Government Department of Health under the National Support for Child and Youth Mental Health Program.